Welcome back to A Link to the Cast. We're on to episode 2A, it is, and it's a bit of an update this episode on a couple of things that we've been up to in the world of video games. A Link to the Cast on MP3, online, and on download. Normally, we'd be reviewing games, but in our special update podcast, we talk about issues affecting games. Going to introduce you to the team. I'm Mick. I take you through all things Nintendo, Nintendo Wii in particular, but also DS. We have Rick, who does all things PlayStation 3.
Hello, that's right.
And fresh from his purchase, or rather acquisition of a PS3, is Brian Shelf.
Hello.
How's it
I'm
working
King
out for
consoles.
You?
It's all right. It looks nice, and I'm just amazed how quiet it is in comparison to the 360. But games-wise,
yeah, no, it's not that inspiring.
The best ones are on Xbox 360 as well. Ooh.
I rang Brian Shelf when he got it, and I said, you do realise now you're going to go out and spend loads of money on PS3 games. He went, I rented 3 last night.
Well, no, I rented 3 Blu-rays. That's what I did. Games I've got, Little Big Planet.
Yay. Get out of here. That game is awesome.
It's all right. It's like, it's kind of like Mario Light with pretty
graphics.
How
on earth could you say that? Oh.
Go on,
I'm actually quite offended.
There's nothing particularly exciting about it. It's all right. I suppose designing your own levels is probably quite
tedious.
Have you?
Yeah.
It's pretty hard work. There's no two ways about that. Have you played many other levels online? People publish levels?
Yeah, bits and pieces, but they tend to be like, I don't know. There's the most popular one seems to be one where they're just showing up weird gaming glitches, and it was just a bit boring.
Really? When I was looking on, you'd find lots of homages to classic games. So you'd get like little Zelda mini levels and things, and it'd be some of the ingenuity of some of the games that I've played on there, like ripping off Ico, and I don't know if you've ever seen that, but how they've used the Little Big Planet engine to make Ico is just unbelievable. The amount of work that some guys have put into some of the levels, I've found.
It's great. I'm sure they put loads of work in, and then you're just increasingly frustrated at the fact that it's only got 3 levels of depth, and you keep falling off stuff, and the control sticks aren't that good. And anyway, but you know, I'm sure it's fine.
What was the follow-up?
Ratchet and Clank, though.
Ratchet and Clank.
Yeah.
Now, I saw that. It was super cheap in a well-known game store. Mm. And I thought, actually, if I had a PS3, that would probably be the first title I'd go for.
They've always been really good sort of action shooters. You know, lots of really creative and ridiculously massive weapons. Always good fun.
Normally, Brian Shelfer does everything Xbox 360. Have you still been cranking out the old box?
No, do you know, I haven't really. I haven't really touched it. I'm overfaced myself with games at the moment, though, and it's that sort of thing. It's like, you know, there's too many to play, so I'm not really finishing any off. And it's like Chinatown Wars is still sat there being unplayed, and Resident Evil 5 I've still not finished. And the most time I've spent playing is Flower on the PS3. That's quite good.
It's not really a game, is it, though? It's kind of a little experience. It's quite a little.
Yeah, it's nice and distracting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
From the tediousness of reality.
And games, by the sounds of things. Yeah, you know, I'm not playing games if Flower's the only thing you've got on. Then well.
One game that we've all been playing recently, and it's going to be the focus of our attention sort of short term, is Professor Layton and the Curious Village. It's the first of a trilogy, which has already come out, actually, in Japan. They're actually on to Game 4. And I understand a film is in the works as well. That's actually confirmed now. Doubt it'll get released over here. But it's a game we've all been playing. I've completed the game. I completed it with 97 puzzles. I'm happy with that now. I've completed the game. The game is finished. Brian Shelf will agree with me.
No, I did all 135 puzzles,
But you'd already completed the game.
I had already completed the game, yeah.
How do you complete the game again?
Well, you just go and finish off all the puzzles and then do the extra puzzles it gives you.
Did you not find it really frustrating trying to find some of those hidden puzzles? You had to tap on like a stall, an upright that was holding a shelter on a market stall to find one of them. I mean, there's no chance of just finding that as you're playing the game through normally.
Well, I had quite a good technique going, because you discover hint coins to help you solve the puzzles by sort of tapping hidden areas of the screen. So whenever I got a new screen, I just used to tap like backwards and forwards with the little stylus over the
that
whole thing.
That sounds like fun.
And, yeah, that finds all the coins and all the puzzles. I think I completed the game with something like 117 puzzles. So, you know, I'd solved a lot on the way through, because you never know which puzzles are the ones that are going to advance the story and which ones are just going to give you a little piece of a picture or...
That was the thing, particularly the story, I think, is quite a good story. For those who don't know, turns out they're all...
No, I mean, you can't do that.
I mean, in terms of the story, it's a great little piece, and animation style-wise, it's absolutely fantastic. And actually, as part when you're playing the game, certainly in the latter stages, you almost want to sort of ignore a lot of the puzzles because you're thinking, I want to get to the next stage in the story, because it picks up quite a pace towards the end.
And it deals with that really well, doesn't it? Because it keeps all the puzzles that you missed in the last chapter, and it hoards them all together in a little house, so that you can go back and, you know, catch up with the puzzles that you did miss, and there's no fear of missing out on part of the game at all.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the target audience, Brian Shelfie, are you surprised how well it's done? It's very hard to find it in any stores at the moment.
I'm not surprised at all, because I mean it's ideal for the casual gamer, which is what the Wii's all about. It's you know, it's part brain training. It's got a story, which, you know, a lot of people are talking about that, but you know, I'm a great believer in what is the point of stories in games. You know, they can't keep you interested like a novel or a good film. You know, they always are pretty much go here and do that. And I found some parts of that frustrating, where it's like, oh, you've got to go back to the mansion, and you go back to the mansion, and then they say, oh, you've got to go, and you end up going backwards and forwards through the same screens again. It's just give me more puzzles. That's all I want to do. But you know, it's the kind of, I see so many people playing it on the train, and I sit there smugly next to them thinking,
I know
no
how to do that.
Is solving that.
do you really just look at people and say, I know how to do that puzzle. I've done that one and the next one. Oh yeah.
I've learnt my lesson about talking to people on trains.
It's a link to the cast, episode 2A, on MP3, on download and online as well. If you want to get in touch with the show, by the way, games@citytalk.fm is the email. Fire us across and we'll pick up those for the mailbag in episode 3, which will be coming hopefully on the 29th of April, I think, which I think is a Wednesday.
Anyway, let's go back to Professor Layton, because I think there's quite an interesting thing. You know, you've mentioned there are already another two games out in Japan, something like Professor Layton and the Woman's Box or something, and I can't remember what the other one's called, time travel something or other. Why are, I mean, Professor Layton, it was well, it'd been out for well over a year in America before we got it over here. You know, these other ones we're being told might be released in about 6 months' time, or at least the first of them might be released in 6 months' time over here. Why do you think it's gone back to this state, which used to be the horrendous state of early 90s video games, of Europe having to seemingly wait forever to get these popular titles?
Now, I thought this problem had been solved. I think Mario Kart, we actually got released in Europe the day before America, and something like a month before Japan or something like that. Or am I thinking of Galaxy or something like that?
I think you're right about Mario Kart, actually. I do remember going to the official launch in London, and we were playing it before the States had switched it on as well. So I'm pretty sure it was the same for Japan as well. But I think, actually, for the DS, most Japanese games have been released in Japan a good few months before they come over here. And I think there's been all sorts of like translation
issues. But I played Layton as per the British version that we received, the PAL version, via an American cartridge literally a year ago, and it was pretty much as per that. Even the voices were the same, so presumably that didn't need changing. I can't think of anything within the game which
they've definitely changed a couple of the puzzles. I was looking on a few websites and like walkthrough sites just to remind myself of a few games, because a few of the puzzles in there, because it's been a good few weeks since I last played this. And I noticed that the US edition has got different versions of the same puzzles. They've got different titles and things. Now, I can't see why that would take 6 months to change four puzzles titles or anything, but they have changed it in some way.
I can understand with really text-heavy things that, you know, it takes a long time to do European translations of things. But yeah, it doesn't take 6 months, and particularly when there's an American version out there. And like you say, the accents, because that's two of the most frustrating things I think about the game is, one, the accents come from the Lost School of English Accents, which is dreadful. The boy particularly, well, it's not a boy, it's a girl, isn't it? Quite clearly as well, going, I think I've got it.
Oh, Professor.
Oh dear. So yeah, that's really bad. So you know, I've got a perfectly good English accent. I'm available on ISDN, and my rates are very reasonable. And the other thing about it is also soundtrack based for me. That was really annoying. Is the music?
Oh, the accordion. I love the accordion.
But when you've got a particularly tough puzzle on, and you're sat there for about 20-30 minutes, and you're just getting, I've got a
and it does just
it
loop over and over and over again.
Oh, we've got a clip.
We'll be right back.
Oh, that was brilliant.
No, just dreadful.
For me, that takes me there to that sort of French bijou style game.
Yeah, it adds to the style and the character of the game. It's all in the artwork and the way that it's brought to you. I found it quite immersive. But I got to say, like you say, if you're stuck on one puzzle for 30 minutes, that can kind of grate a bit.
Just turn it down.
That's all you do. That's all you do. Yeah.
Most annoying puzzle?
The water jug ones. Three or four versions of the same puzzle. That annoyed me a hell.
The one that I found most annoying was four pieces of string folded over each other. If you pull the ends of both of them, or all four of them, which end
form a knot would form or which a wouldn't knot. Be.
The other one that really, really annoyed me was if you roll a dice.
Oh, no, not that one, yeah.
If you roll a dice three times, the odds of rolling a three on the first go, 1 in 6, 2 threes, 1 in 36, 3 threes, 1 in 216. So, and then he goes, what are the odds of the fourth dice being a three as well? Now, instantly, you go...
You see, you've got the puzzle wrong there, because it says, what are the odds of the when you roll a fourth dice, it being a three?
Right, okay.
Not being a three as well.
Okay. Well, it's the same, because the fourth dice would be a three.
But it's not the same.
It's not the same. That's the logic of the problem.
I'm sorry, buddy.
Right, okay. The general gist is that the answer is 1 in 6 again, because it's a single roll of the dice.
Yeah.
Now, the options are 1 in 6, 2... 1 in 36, or 3 1 in 216. Type in your answer. And it's not like a 1/6 or anything like that. It's just a one-digit thing you put in. So is it 1 1 in 6, 2 1 in 36, or 3 1 in 216? So I put 1, because it's 1 in 6. Wrong. I thought, that's not right. And actually, what they wanted you to put in was 6, as in 1 in how many? 1 in 6, even though the options were 1, 2, or 3. And I found that really annoying, because I actually put in all the three answers in.
I still got it wrong.
Thinking that I'd somehow made a mistake, and I ended up losing Picarats like nobody's business.
Oh, dear.
It does say early on as well, actually, I find this slightly annoying, that the more Picarats you get, the more likely something is to happen. But it never actually happened for me, and I did quite well on the old Picarat score. But...
Yeah, to be honest, they make no reference to Picarats at any point.
No, I just found myself hoarding them for no real reason, but...
I've gone from saying that this is a great game to now thinking, what on earth were they thinking?
No! It's still a really charming little handheld experience, and, okay, the Picarats thing didn't make sense, and I didn't go back and finish the little... thing or whatever, and
given it away.
Oh, as if you couldn't tell from the beginning. You even got a single part of it.
Yeah.
I didn't go back and complete it, but I still enjoyed the whole thing
and just
tremendously.
One sort of other point I want to bring up on Professor Layton, it throws up that issue of hoarding. Do you keep going for everything there is in a game, or are you actually quite happy to complete a game as per its state? Super Mario Galaxy, for instance, you play it through once, you complete the game. Are you happy with that, or do you have to play it through again, collecting all the coins?
Now, is this a talking point?
I think this is a talking point.
Let's talk.
Do we have a little thing that goes, talking point?
No, say talking point. I'll turn it into some clever sound thing.
Talking point.
Wait till you hear the podcast now and you'll hear that I'll have done nothing.
Particularly with games like Super Mario Galaxy, played it through... And I almost find it difficult to actually play through again just to claim a couple of extra stars or coins. But Brian Shelf, I know you laboured over it to the point of almost...
Obsession.
Obsession? Yeah. I think that might be the word.
I think that there's two types of games for me, because I am quite a completist. You know, that's what I used to do when I was growing up, when I first discovered that you could get a little star next to your name if you got found all of the finishes on Super Mario World, all the different exits out of all the level, you got a little star next to it. So I became a completist, and every game I played, I would play all the way through to the end. And I'll still do that. Super Mario Galaxy, for example, is a prime example, because you've got a set objective. There are 120 stars, and each one's got its own course, so you're seeing something new as you go. But something changed for me round about the time of Zelda Ocarina of Time, where there were certain tasks that you had to do to complete the story, but there was also shooting a hundred of these Skulltildas, was it? Or these little spiders that were kind of hidden all over the place. And I'm sure you got something great for the end of it, but there was no sense of actually doing that. And kind of games divide into two things for me now. Professor Layton, there's a definite objective. There's 135 puzzles. You get a real sense of satisfaction of solving all 135 of those puzzles. Whereas, say, for example, Fallout 3, the chance of actually getting 100% on that, because there's so many tiny little things to do.
You really think? Because that's what I'm actually hoarding on right now. I'm playing Fallout 3 and intentionally going to get all of the trophies, because I actually think that's one of the more achievable games that they've got out there.
You think so? Because you've got to do it through three times.
No, but
you've got to
do it on
positive, on neutral, and on negative karma, which seems impossible.
Yeah, exactly. If you had to play it through three times, that would be impossible. But the trick is, surely, you just save it just before, or in the level before you have to go up, because like you say, you have to go through level 7 as good or neutral or evil karma, and then 14 and 20 doing the same. Well, you just make a save which you keep backed up when you're in level 7, and then you just have a whole lot of fun being evil, just going around and like kicking off fights and just trying a different way of playing it. That's why I've kind of decided to do that, because naturally, in these kinds of games, I don't know why, but I tend to try and be the good guy. I try and help people out. So in Fallout 3, my main character, or my actual character rather, has got really very good karma. He's a very nice and good person. But all you do is, like I say, I've got to level 7, I've saved it, I've tried being a bit nasty and getting neutral karma, just seeing how that plays, stealing things out of people. You get a trophy
out of people.
Well, if you creep up behind them, if you're stealthing it, your interaction goes to pickpocket, doesn't it? And you can plant grenades in them, and you're just having a bit of a different way of playing it, and then and then going all out evil to try and get the evil trophies. I really enjoyed it.
That's kind of an anathema to me, the whole concept of gaming, though, this idea of saving it and going back and doing things. You know, it kind of should be all part of the experience for me. And I just think often there's just too much in it. I'm all for games being big, but
Grand Theft Auto's a big example of that for me. There's no way in hell I'm ever going to complete that 100%. To go and shoot all those pigeons and then find all the hidden packages or whatever they're called as well. It's just far too much. And you know, that's pretty boring stuff to do. No offense, but shooting pigeons is hardly the most thrilling activity to be, you know, chasing after, to think you've got another 150 of them to go for. It's hardly very exciting.
Get enough of that in real life.
Is it a form of OCD slightly, do you think? Trophy hoarding, going for the 135 out of 135. Brian Shelf, were you really just, for instance, when you're on that 134 out of 135, were you at night when you were going to bed thinking, what earth am I supposed to put on this flaming puzzle? What's the answer I'm looking for? Was it actually driving you mad in that respect?
Not particularly, no. Although there were plenty of sleepless nights just because I always play my DS in bed. It's the only place I ever play it.
And after you've turned the light on 17 times.
Wash your hands about 6.
And made sure the towels are still nice and straight. You know, it gets late, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The other game that I really actually tried to hoard on, which is the game where I was racing for high scores all the time, was Diddy Kong Racing on the N64. And I think actually I became slightly obsessed with that, particularly when you can race a shadow of your former self chasing high scores. That's the one game where I've really, really chased high scores. Whereas other games, Mario Kart, for instance, once I've completed the game as per just playing through the game, I've actually reverted then to playing it as multiplayer and using that as the enjoyment factor rather than going back through over and over again.
True, and the twist in Diddy Kong Racing, though, and what would make that as a game that I also completed, was that they'd done it cleverly and they'd worked it into the gameplay, in the fact of that, you know, you race it in the normal way, and then you've got the gold coin races where you've got to take really obscure lines around the track and still finish in first place. So it's constantly showing you new things and teaching you new things.
I think that's really the trick for any game that wants to be seen to be a good replayable game, like Metal Gear. For me, Metal Gear 4 was a really great replayable game because you could go through it again and unlock extra items like your stealth camo and all sorts of hidden guns. So there was an incentive.
True. And with Metal Gear 4, you find brand new ways of yawning through all the cutscenes as well. So
you can skip them once you've been through once, man. That's the trick.
I think in conclusion, we're all correct. We're all right in our own way. Your thoughts welcome. Games at citytalk.fm. We'll have a look at those in the next episode, episode 3. I'll be playing along. Playing my way through Mad World.
I'm looking at X-Men Wolverine Origins.
And which one out of your 25 games, Brian Shelf, are you going to be bringing to the table?
Do you know, I don't know. I don't think I've got one for the Xbox. I don't know at the moment. So suggestions, what game
do
I
do Flower. Review Flower for us.
I'll review, yeah. You're come a battle on the breeze.
Excellent stuff. That'll all come through on a link to the cast, episode 3. Coming through, depending on when you're listening to this, in a day's time, in a week's time, it'll actually be something like the 29th of April. I'll be 27 by then, so your birthday wishes also, feel free to email them.
games@citytalk.fm. Tell Mick what you think. Go on.
Excellent stuff. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back with another one in a couple of weeks' time.
Have fun. Do you think anyone will notice if I just go back and record myself pronouncing anathema correctly and just drop it in?